This is the Mason Vera Payne Show,
your go-to lifestyle podcast, covering everything from technology and gaming
to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond.
Brought to you from Chicago, USA,
with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne. Thanks for tuning in. I hope everyone had a fun and safe New Year's Eve. And now that it's passed, let's all reflect on whether your New Year's resolution will actually stick. I know I have trouble sticking to mine, which every year it seems to revolve around my health, which, you know, stop smoking, lose weight, stick to my health appointments better, you know, something like that. To help us better understand how to stick to your resolutions, I have Dr. Peter Andrew Sacco joining us today. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Sacco.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's all mine, and for everybody out there listening, I hope your 2016 is already an awesome year.
Hopefully. It's been starting off pretty good. And, you know, speaking of the new year, I actually wanted to talk about resolutions. Do you know how resolutions started?
Well, you know, if you really look into it, there's like old, you know, folklore or old tradition where it was kind of like out with the old, in with the new. And so some societies, you know, you can go back to the 1700s, 1800s, it would actually be, okay, new year, new growth, new ideas, change. And so that's where that kind of came from. But I'm almost like, and I do the comparison to Valentine's Day, which is basically a Hallmark holiday, basically for, you know, created by Hallmark in a roundabout way for cards. And I think it's the same kind of, you know, passé, in vogue thing for New Year's, that the media got a hold of it, and in a roundabout way, you get a lot of organizations like weight loss clinics, smoking cessation clinics, and all that stuff that basically say, hey, be a new you in whatever the year is. And so this year it's 2016.
You know, that's so true. I think every year I tell myself this is the year I'm going to quit smoking. And most of the time it doesn't work out. Do you know why some people it just doesn't work out for them? I guess they fail at their resolutions.
Well, you know what? One of the biggest things, Mason, is a lot of people don't make the change for themselves. They do it for other people. So hypothetically, or statistically speaking, 8% of all people that started resolutions this year for January 1st are still, you know, going strong and will continue throughout the year and to keep that change, whereas 92% will not succeed. And I'm not going to say fail, but they'll give up and maybe try again later or not try and put it up to 2017. So with that said, smoking is one of these interesting ones because I've been in addictions for over 20 years, working with some of the worst-case addiction scenarios, like heroin, severe alcoholism, and then also to the habitual addictive-type substances like nicotine, which is smoking, and also caffeine. And one of the things that I have found is when you look at something like smoking, you first have to separate, is it habitual, a bad habit, or is it an actual addiction? And then if it is an addiction, is it more psychological, or is it more physiological, where you actually need the nicotine within your system? So I think with that said, though, the first starting point is the individual that wants to quit smoking has to want to do so for themselves for the right reasons, and it has to be an intrinsic reason coming from within, meaning they want to quit to improve their health, to avoid, I guess, negative health. Some people say they just want to quit because everybody else around them doesn't smoke and they care about their health or their lifestyle. And some people just say, Mason, I want to quit smoking because it's bloody ridiculous.
You know, I know you have a book out about procrastination, right? I can't think of it off the top of my head. But, you know, I read part of it and I really liked how you talked about a lot of our bad habits could actually be because of procrastination. And, you know, going back to the smoking, I know that it's I do procrastinate about it because it's like, oh, you know, after this one pack, because I already paid for it, it will be after this pack, or it'll be like, well, after this stressful time or whatever's going on, like that's when I'll quit. Is procrastination itself an addiction?
Absolutely. It can become an addiction. It can be very habitual. The book that you're referring to that I just put out actually is called Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right, the Handbook to Understanding and Overcoming Procrastination and Keeping Positive Changes Coming. It's not necessarily a resolutions book for New Year's, but it's for change throughout the year. And what I did is I put basically over 20 years of experience working with people with bad habits and extremely bad addictions into what worked for them, those that overcame. And when I put this out, ironically, it was, I wanted to put it up for free on my website, and the publisher said, no, we absolutely can't do that. So for fun, we had to charge 99 cents for it because that was just the base low on Amazon.
Right.
And my fun, you know, logic with this was, is that for 99 cents, you can change your life with a page, or it's a book that's under 100 pages, which is basically less than the price of a cup of coffee, or in some, you know, regards, less than the price of a few cigarettes. And with that said, I wanted to get to the root of why people keep on keeping on with their bad habits. And the number one cause in a lot of these situations is procrastination. It's the sense of, well, there was some sort of possibly traumatic event that happened to an individual, a perceived traumatic event, or they've just have not succeeded in the past, and rather than view it as deferred success, like, hey, I'm going to get it right sooner or later, they view it as a failure, and people want to avoid failing again. So then what they do is they procrastinate about it. They become habituated to putting it off, dealing with it at a later date, or where we are right now in this time frame is there's a lot of entitlement. So they expect other people to fix things for them.
That entitlement part is pretty true. I've met quite a few people who feel like, oh, I don't need to do something because somebody else will fix it. Or, you know, when it comes to dishes or cleaning or even office work, I've seen people just like, oh, I'm not going to put my whole 100% in it because somebody else is going to do it. It's like high school with group projects. It was horrible.
Yeah. And you know what, Mason? Part of it is accountability. There's a lot of people that, first of all, don't want to take the responsibility because, you know, it's like, wow, what if I fail? And I've always said to them, so you fail. You're not having really failed. You just haven't gotten it right yet. You've just, you know, learning on how to do it right the next time. So that's part of it. Another part is that people have done the work for them or they've never been accountable to it. And then they basically say, hey, why should I even try doing it? Because somebody else will do it. And that's, you know, in a roundabout way, it's funny you bring up smoking cessation because there are some people that I've heard them say point blank, well, you know what, I want to quit smoking, but I'm just not ready. And then I'm thinking, okay, you say you want to quit smoking, but you're just not ready. So what they're doing is living on two sides of the fence, basically trying to do this balance act where they'll say one day I'll get around to it. And that's part of the problem where they want to get around to it someday, but they just want somebody else to do it for them, or they want to find some sort of easy way out of it. And by the way, there is actually an easy way to actually help with a lot of bad habits and, you know, quote-unquote, some psychological addictions like smoking or caffeine abuse, which is hypnosis, which I do get into it in a little short chapter in the book because I've done hypnosis, clinical hypnotherapy for over 23 years, and it does really work as well, too, and you can actually do it through self-hypnosis on your own time as well.
What could you do? I mean, I've never done hypnosis or, you know, I've heard about it for smoking, but I've always been kind of skeptical about it. How would that help? Like, what do you say? You know, like, can you really be hypnotized?
You know what, Mason? Everybody has been hypnotized in their life, definitely. You know, they'll say, well, people will always say, well, no, I'm not hypnotizable. It's never happened to me. And I'll say, well, have you ever driven from, say, work to home? And the next thing you know, you're in your driveway and you go, gee, how the hell did I get here? I don't even remember passing anything. I was so focused, zoned in. Or have you ever read a book? People are all around you chatting and you don't hear a word. And I know guys will be guilty of this. Like myself, I can be watching a football game and, you know, and my significant other, let's say, could be saying, hey, blah, 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 this is what we need to do and all this. And I haven't heard a word. Or you're in a theater. You're watching a movie that's scary. You jump. Or you're watching a flick that makes you cry. And I'll say to these people, well, it's not real. Why are you crying or why are you afraid? Because you've put your mind into a state of heightened awareness, which is tunnel vision. And so you can bring your mind to where you want it to go, which is, you know, the old saying is where thoughts go, energy flows. So if you start to embed thoughts into your conscious mind, they'll start to go into your unconscious mind, which generally takes about 28 days. And if you refer to yourself as a non-smoker, as smoke-free, then you will eventually get there because your unconscious mind has to take what you're putting into it as the gospel truth, and it will have to live according to that. And that's what hypnosis is. It's tunnel vision, highly focused sensations, and thoughts where you make them become things.
Do you only need one session, or is this like over a course of a month, or how would that go?
Some people can do it in one session. Others, it could take a lot longer. But then that's once again going all the way back to how ready and willing is somebody wanting to change. You know, we can go non-hypnosis here, and some people will do really well, i.e. for weight loss and, you know, getting physically fit. Because they're dedicated to it, they're eating properly, they're getting themselves to the gym. And generally speaking, I would say that, you know, if you really want to do weight loss and get fit, roughly that's going to be about 70 to 80% of that is all about nutrition and eating good and eating clean and being diligent to that. And so they'll get really good results fast, and others will say, oh my gosh, I've been going to so-and-so club, spending all this fortune, I'm not getting, you know, I'm losing maybe a pound or two, you know, every week or something, where so-and-so is losing, they've lost 5 or 6 pounds in, you know, a week and a half. Why aren't I getting those results? And I think that's the wrong question, is asking yourself, why isn't it working for me, or why am I not getting the results, but rather, why am I feeling good and why am I engaged in this? Because then you're leading your mind into saying, hey, we're making a change here. So it's all about verbal talk, and it's an inside job, I always say.
You know, you said people who are ready and willing. I went through the book, and you had like a little 20-question test to take. And when you were done taking the test, you were then given like a level of what type of procrastinator you are. And does that have a lot to do with it as well? Like if you're really bad at procrastinating, or if you're really focused on it, I mean, does that help?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think that's paramount to it, because what you're basically doing is setting the bar. And I think, and I always say this, if you're going to make change in your life, don't set the bar too high to start. Just start gradually and create one or two changes that you want to make rather than doing 10. Because if you try to do 10 and one or two fail, then it has a reciprical effect in terms of this domino is starting to fall, and then you'll want to do any of them. So with that said, depending on your level of procrastination, there's different, I'll use for example, it's cold outside, okay, it's January, first week of January, I was going to, let's say somebody's saying I was going to start walking, well, it's just too cold, I'll defer it to next week, because it's supposed to be like 15, 20 degrees warmer, it'll be a lot easier to do that, so they're putting it off to next week. Then they start to get into it, and then they'll say, well, I just saw the weather. The Doppler says, another cold front's coming in, so I'm going to have to put that off for another 2 weeks or whatever. So, I'll wait till after Valentine's Day, because I'm going to be out with my honey, and we're going to eat a lot of junk food and all this stuff. So we'll wait till then. Then it's going to be, oh, but then we have spring break coming. We're going to go away. If we go away, I know I'm going to be drinking and eating bad stuff because we're going on a cruise. So, I'll wait till I come back. Then it's like, oh my gosh, it's Easter. Easter's coming. Oh no, we're going to do the chocolate Easter egg hunt. We'll wait till after Easter. Then it's going to become Memorial Day. Then it's 4th of July. Then it's Labor Day. So you see what I'm saying is that will determine your level of procrastination in terms of if you're always looking ahead for excuses or reasons to not do something, you're not living in the present moment, which means being active with your mind and engaging in whatever you need to do for change.
That is so true. I know I've said that, like I did that with smoking. It's always after, like, oh, after this, then it'll be after that. Oh, wait, what about this coming up? And I've actually done that with exercising too in the past. And with, this is a better story. So when I was in college, I had a study for my final, and I remember I wrote down all the stuff I had to study, in a specific order, and halfway through it, I stopped and said, you know what? My mother has been asking me to wash the walls and the floorboard and to mop. I'm going to do that.
And that's what it is. It's like deferring or looking for distractions because you don't want to engage anything. And I can ask you this. I'll ask you this point blank, Mason, and anybody listening, I ask you the same question, okay? So if somebody told you, and this was 100% authenticated, guaranteed, the President of the United States calls you and says, you know what, Mason, we have $1 million for you. $1 million, it belongs to you, it's tax-free. There's been, this whole thing with your ancestry down the lineage. There was tax misunderstandings with the IRS. So we have $1 million that you have to claim. The only thing is you have to drive from wherever you are right now to Washington, D.C., and be there within the next 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And I ask anybody out there, and I'll ask you, are you going to make excuses if it's a little cold out or if the roads are icy or whatever? I'll bet 99% of people would do whatever the heck it took, moving heaven and hell, to go get that $1 million.
Absolutely. I know I would.
And you see, that's my point. It's, sometimes we don't have our priorities proper, where a lot of people, you know, will only worry about their health once they get sick or once it's diminishing. And that's a hard thing to get back once you've lost it. And sometimes people need a wake-up call for things. But yet, if it's got to do with something outside of them that's materialistically rewarding or serves to better their lives instantaneously, they have no reservations in terms of following through, because it takes little or no work.
You know, I read in the book a lot of times you refer to people who, I guess, I hate to use the word fail, but people who don't complete what they wanted to do, what their goal was. It was a fear of failure. What about the fear of success? Because personally, I think of, like, with the smoking, it's so ingrained in my habits for the day. I mean, I have a cup of coffee with my cigarette. You know, it's like, well, you know, am I going to drink coffee without my cigarette? It just doesn't feel the same. And part of me wonders, is that more of like fear of success? Like, once I successfully quit smoking, all my habits will just completely change altogether.
That's a great point, Mason. I think a lot of it is, there's a fear factor to it. But there's also this element of uncertainty. It's like, wow, okay, if I do give up smoking, all of my buds smoke, or if I give up drinking. And this is what I used to hear from colleagues of mine that went into the program for AA and other sort of sobriety programs, where they said, I had a ton of friends when I was drinking and partying, but once I went into a 30-day program and I came out, there was no messages on my phone for me. All my drinking buddies stopped calling me. So some people will actually say, if I give up smoking or if I give up drinking or whatever it is that I'm doing that's a bad habit, bad addiction, or a negative vice in my life, I might lose that circle of friends, or people might start treating me differently or not wanting to be around, or other people might not want me to change. So they may encourage or enable me to continue doing the bad stuff that I'm doing, because they have this perceived sense of power over my life, or they fit in with me. So you're absolutely right. You hit the hammer right on the head of the nail. Some people will not want to change for all of the wrong reasons, because they worry about what others think or what they themselves will stand amongst other people.
You know, what could you tell someone like who is in that situation, or just anyone who's trying to do change their life? It doesn't have to be New Year's. I'm a big advocate of, you know, if you want to change something today, do it today. There's no time to wait. But what tips can you give a person who does want to do something to change their life?
Well, very, very first thing, you make the change for yourself. Do it for all the right reasons. Don't do it to impress anybody. Don't do it so other people will want you or like you or whatever. Because even if you are making those changes, you're going to resent them in a roundabout way, even unconsciously, because you're going to blame them for changing your life and that you didn't want to change. Secondly, I think you have to take things, I always say, inch by inch, everything's a cinch, which is basically the motto and the creed for Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, that basically, one day at a time, you can only control the present moment. So, live in the present and live day by day. But with that said, look and get very clear at what your end result is, what you want to be in the end, and get very clear about it. What is that going to feel like to you once you've achieved that? Once you get that feeling into your body, your soul, your spirit, and your unconscious mind, you've basically, you know, put an end destination on your GPS, and your unconscious mind will work tooth and nail to get you there as long as your conscious mind is working towards it and using the right thoughts and saying the right things to get you there. And also, one other thing that I say is extremely important. The most important two words in the entire human lexicon begin with I am. Because whatever you say after that is going to be your gospel truth.
Oh my God, well thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed you being here, Dr. Sacco.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And as I said, definitely get the book, Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right. It's right on Amazon. By myself, Dr. Peter Sacco, and it will make a huge difference in your life. As I said, you deserve to live your best self in 2016.
Thanks for coming on, Dr. Sacco. His book, Breaking Those Damn Habits and Finally Getting Things Right, The Handbook to Understanding and Overcoming Procrastination and Keeping Positive Changes Coming, is available on Amazon.com for 99 cents. As for more information on Peter or his other books, please visit petersacco.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.